Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, November 7, 2022. World leaders meet in Egypt to discuss effects of climate change.
Leaders said they planned to focus efforts on getting funding in place to help people cope with extreme weather in the world's hardest hit places.
And a nonprofit group is offering free eye screening, examination, and surgery this week to residents of Jubatown.
We're actually targeting eye care, and we've been doing that for the last 6 years, focusing on neglected tropical diseases. It's part of our CSR, corporate social responsibility.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Climate Summit opened Sunday in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, as officials predict catastrophic consequences of inaction and pledge to begin work of helping the people most devastated by climate change. Farmers not far from the conference in Egypt say help cannot come faster enough. VOA's Heather Murdock reports from Istanbul.
When Hadda Saad was a child here in Egypt's Nile Delta, the weather was moderate, and crops fetched prices high enough to make a comfortable living.
Now the weather is hellish. In the daytime it is hot, and at night it is freezing. The plants are pinched by this weather. It is not good. This is the problem with farming now.
The Nile Delta is Egypt's most important farming area. It is already suffering from rising seawater, robbing locals of valuable land. And as the UN climate conference, known as COP27, opened in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt on Sunday, leaders said they planned to focus efforts on getting funding in place to help people cope with extreme weather in the world's hardest hit places, which have seen unprecedented fires, floods, and storms this year.
I particularly welcome the agreement of the parties to include a new agenda item on funding arrangements to respond to loss and damage.
Leaders are expected to disagree on if or how rich nations should compensate poor countries for climate disasters. President. Officials say the talks' most critical goal is implementing the plans made in the 2015 Paris Agreement, which aims to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. And although the rule book for how to do this has been established, according to delegates, most countries have not put forward comprehensive plans. The UN says now, more than ever, the consequences of inaction could be devastating, with deadly heat waves, rapidly rising seas, and melting glaciers threatening lives and livelihoods on every continent. For some people, it may be possible to adapt to new weather, says Saad in the Nile Delta, but not without resources.
If the weather is beautiful, you will get nice crops. But if it's like this, the plants are ruined and you can't find something to sell.
Saad says other world crises are deepening the strain caused by climate change for poor families, like high prices on fertilizer and currency devaluation. Heather Murdock, VOA News, Istanbul.
Dr. Philips Pharmaceutical Company is offering free eye surgery to people with eye cataract at Juba Teaching Hospital this week. The managing director of the group is calling on residents of Jubatown to take advantage of the free eye care services. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Dr. Abdallah John Bosco, a medical officer and a surgeon at Juba Teaching Hospital, says there are many people who have gone blind in South Sudan from preventable eye diseases like cataracts.
People go blind from two diseases, one of which, if you go blind, the blindness cannot be revived. That's glaucoma. And it's in a very big number here in South Sudan.
Dr. Abdallah says some people delay visiting the hospital for eye checkups, including those with eye diseases. He says most of the eye problems in South Sudan have affordable treatment available at Juba Teaching Hospital.
Very unfortunately, most of our people in the periphery, they don't actually get access to services. And when they come to the facility, it's when that it's late and they cannot be helped to see again. But for those who have gone blind from cataract, we operate on them if they come to the facility and they see.
Dr. Abdallah says trachoma is another condition that can cause blindness because the cornea becomes destroyed from eyelashes rubbing the inside of the eyes. He says cataract surgery can change the lives of individuals who have been struggling with blindness for years. Emmanuel Tangun is the director of the Dr. Phillips Tangun Foundation, a nonprofit sponsoring this year's free eye campaign and eye examination. Emmanuel Tangun says the annual event is a memory of the late Dr. Philip Tangun, who opened a pharmacy in Juba back in 1973 and continued to serve the people of South Sudan. Emmanuel Tangun says the free eye surgery is part of the company's corporate social responsibility to give back to the community.
The campaign that is happening next week, we're actually targeting eye care, and we've been doing that for the last 6 years, focusing on neglected tropical diseases. It's part of our CSR, corporate social responsibility, and we've been working closely with Bullock Eye Center, as well as now the Juba Teaching Hospital, and we've done it all through, except for 2020 when there was COVID.
The free eye camp and eye examination will be running from the 7th to the 11th of November at the Juba Teaching Hospital. Tangun urges residents of Juba Town to show up for free eye screening in order to know the status of their eyes and become aware of possible solutions from optical experts. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Shapai in Juba.
The Association of Gynecologists in South Sudan say more than 1,000 women die due to bleeding during childbirth. The group says the high maternal mortality is due to several factors, including early pregnancy. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Juba.
Speaking at the first annual scientific conference of the Association of Gynecologists and Obstetricians in South Sudan, Association President Dr. Grang Dagjur said the rate of maternal mortality is high in South Sudan compared to neighboring countries.
Our mothers are dying because of bleeding. What is the problem? The problem is most of our health centers are not having the blood transfusion services. Even the facilities that are having blood transfusion services are not even getting blood. And from whom should we get blood? It's from you guys who are sitting here. So if we take a responsibility of saving our mothers, sisters, and wives, then the first commitment should be donating blood.
Dr. Dagjur says early pregnancy, healthcare workers' low pay, and limited donation and transfusion services in most facilities across the country are the causes of high rates of maternal mortality in South Sudan. South Sudan has the world's largest maternal mortality rate, with 1,150 deaths for every 100,000 live births, according to the U.S.-based nonprofit Concern Worldwide. Unlike many of the countries on this list, that number has risen steadily over the last few years. Dr. Doug Jules says the government needs to do more to reduce the nation's maternal mortality rate.
So if you compare it with Ethiopia, you get Ethiopia is around 400. If you go to Kenya, you get Kenya is around 300. If you come to Sudan, you get Sudan is around 200. But yet, we are still at 1,150. Did we ask ourselves, why are we still different from the region? I'm sure that we know the bottlenecks around our high maternal mortality.
At the same conference, Hussein Abdelvaghi, South Sudan's vice president for the service cluster, acknowledged the challenges facing maternal health and said the government is working to address those problems.
We as the policymaker are working tirelessly to formulate policies aligned with the international guidelines, which will provide conducive working environment for medical personnel and scientists to allow
Since South Sudan gained independence in 2011, it has faced high levels of food insecurity and violence, as well as some of the greatest levels of gender inequality in the world. All of these factors, combined with the lack of adequate health care and a high number of internally displaced persons, South Sudan is the worst country for an expecting mother, according to Concern Worldwide. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese military leader says he will step aside to pave way for a civilian-led government. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get. Or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself, I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with the children.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A group calling itself Concerned South Sudanese say South Sudan and Sudan should recognize the results of the unilateral referendum conducted by the Dinkangok of Abyei in 2013. Alphonse Andrew Laku, Secretary General for Research and Planning of the National Initiative for Supporting Abyei, says the two countries should conduct a referendum for Abyei. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
The group calls itself National Initiative for Supporting the Ultimate Solution of Abyei Status. Members of the group say its campaign is motivated by the increasing instability in the Abyei region, which has left dozens of people dead and displaced many others. The group wants the governments of South Sudan and Sudan to finally reach an agreement on the disputed region by supporting the results of the unilateral Abyei referendum held 9 years ago. Alphonse Andrew Laku, Secretary for Research and Planning of the National Initiative for Supporting the Ultimate Solution of Abyei Status, says his group is calling on the South Sudan government to legitimize the results of the referendum, which was part of the recommendations of the South Sudan National Dialogue Conference held in 2020.
If the two governments can come together and appreciate and also recognize the 2013 referendum, we will stand for that. Or also, there is this African Union High Commission Committee led by Thabo Mbeki. They also came up with a proposal that if it's possible, also people of Abyei to have another referendum.
In October 2013, the Ngokondinga community in Abyei conducted a unilateral vote to determine whether Abyei would be part of Sudan or South Sudan. Results of the referendum showed 99% of the Abyei people favored joining South Sudan over remaining with Sudan. But the referendum results were never recognized by both governments or the international community. Laku says the two countries should conduct a new referendum for Abyei if they refuse to recognize the previous referendum results. He says his group will carry out several campaign activities, including media engagements, artwork, poetry, rallies, and cultural festivals to draw attention to the Abyei problem and settle it once and for all.
As a concerned people, we say that we have to voice ourselves out and to bring the other dimension that the people of South Sudan see that the issue of Abyei is a national issue, and that we need to come up with a mechanism how to give awareness to people and how to let people know there are people who doesn't know that actually Abyei issue is Some of them think that this is just for Abyei.
The Abyei region has experienced repeated deadly attacks from both South Sudanese and Sudanese gunmen in recent years. Last month, young men in the Abyei administrative area and those from neighboring Twitch East County in Warab State engaged in intercommunal violence that left 27 people dead. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Udu in Juba.
Sudan's military leader has reiterated the army's commitment to step aside and allow a civilian government to be established. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan says the leadership vacuum in Sudan should not continue and urged the country's various parties to reach a consensus. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Military ruler General al-Burhan says the army is preparing to leave the political scene, so the country's political forces should reach a consensus on a transitional civilian-led government. Addressing hundreds of military officers in Khartoum over the weekend, General al-Burhan reaffirmed the army's commitment to ensuring that Sudan is stable and a civilian government is created. He blamed civilian political forces for dragging their feet on reaching a consensus amongst themselves.
Any document that is tabled for dialogue should be discussed. All the political forces should sit and legislate and amend what is needed. Anything related to the army will not be compromised. We will not allow anybody to decide on our behalf. We are responsible for what we are saying and we are ready to die for it.
Sudanese political parties have yet to agree on a unified platform which could allow them to establish a government. The Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC Coalition, a group of political parties that signed a power-sharing deal with the military in August 2019, continues to reject an agreement before an end to the country's military rule. Al-Burhan says Sudan cannot continue without a proper government structure.
The situation in the country is no longer bearing any risk as any party is holding its own document or initiative. Each party is trying to pull others to follow them. We will not follow anybody. We are here to serve the interests of this nation.
Speaking to this program via a messaging application in Khartoum, FFC member Mahassin Khalifa says al-Burhan has no legitimacy to decide the fate of the country. Khalifa says the past year of military rule has proven that the army has failed to run the country and should leave the political scene altogether. She says the FFC remains committed to a political settlement and shall continue to work with who she calls loyalists in the army.
We still have national loyalists within the Sudan army, and we don't expect them to follow any party or political forces. We expect them to be a professional army with the responsibility to defend the territory of this country.
Efforts by the United Nations and the African Union to bring different Sudanese forces to a consensus have yet to register any progress. The parties continue to demand that the military immediately end the coup. Musab Muhammad Ali, a political science lecturer at the Nilen University, says the only way forward is through a political dialogue among the parties. He says even though the army has committed to turning over the government to civilians, the parties should not commit the mistake of excluding young people holding protests on the streets.
I do not expect any successful political compromise without involving the young people, who are the majority of those behind the Sudanese revolution. Exclusion of this category could affect political stability in the future.
Pro-democracy Sudanese continue to protest on the streets, demanding an end to military rule and establishment of a civilian-led transitional government. Security forces have continued to suppress the protesters, killing more than 100 people and injuring about 7,000 others since the protests began, according to the Sudanese Doctors' Central Committee. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland recently led an interagency delegation to key countries in the Sahel, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. The delegation met with government, military, and civil society leaders to discuss security, governance, and development issues. One of the direst threats the four countries face is an increase in terrorist violence. At a press briefing after her return, Undersecretary Nuland noted that the United States is working closely with the militaries in Mauritania, Niger, and Burkina Faso to support them in their efforts to protect their populations. She described Mauritania as a 10-year island of stability in a very, very rough neighborhood and praised Mauritania's success with the support of the United States and other international actors in fighting terrorism. She noted, however, the concern of Mauritania's leaders over events in neighboring Mali, particularly the entry of the Kremlin-backed Wagner forces. Since deployment of the Wagner forces to Mali late last year, terrorist incidents have significantly increased. Also, there are human rights abuses across the region where they are working, said Undersecretary Nuland. We worry that these forces are not interested in the safety and security of the people of Mali, but instead are interested in enriching themselves and strip mining the country, making the terrorism situation worse. Undersecretary Nuland noted that because of the coup in Mali, the United States is limited under law in how it can support government forces, and the situation is exacerbated by the decision by the Malian leaders to invite in the Wagner Group. We are not going to operate in the same space, she said. More positively, Undersecretary Nuland noted it looks as if the Malian interim government is keeping to its commitment to hold elections in 2024. She also said that during her visit to Burkina Faso, interim President Ibrahim Traoré and his team told her unequivocally that it is Burkinabe who will defend the security of the nation, and they have no intention of inviting Wagner in. Tragically, the Sahel has become an epicenter for terrorism. The answer cannot be to turn to forces with no concern for the well-being of the people living there. The United States will continue to work with its partners to help the people of the region deal with the security challenges they face.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Sultan Clinton and the song Jamila.
Jamila, habibti, ana wadi naita kelima raikul, alela lakini tawajila na wajakeli ba.
Jamila.
Listening to Sultan Clinton and the song Jamila. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
In your casa,